Welcome to Outdoors with Dan Small and Judy Nugent, brought to you by LakeLink, your online fishing resource, on the web at lake-link.com. Well, Judy, did you get dug out and do anything exciting last weekend?
Oh, boy, we had a snow day. What could be more exciting than that? Do you remember that as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, when that call came and there was no school, the kids were so excited and building forts and tunnels and sledding. And my son's got this snowboard, so he's building ramps and doing the whole snowboard thing. And
cool.
That was fun.
Cool.
But no, I didn't get out into my tree stand at all. It was all snowed in. But you had a parade. How'd that go?
I was in my second Christmas parade at Sheboygan Falls, and that was fun. We had snow for that one.
Yeah,
which
good.
We didn't the week before in Grafton. It was an evening parade. It was a lot of fun. I get towed by some folks there from B&B Ford, and I was right in front of the WHBL vehicle.
Oh, yeah, our station up there.
Our station in Sheboygan.
Cool.
And speaking of stations, we've got a couple new stations.
Yes, we do. We would like to welcome our new listeners. We've got listeners from WXCO in Wausau and WVRQ in Viroqua. So thanks for listening. If you like the show or have any suggestions, please send us an email. You can find our shows at lake-link.com, keyword radio.
That's right. And when you're on that page, you can enter the drawing to win a Camp Chef turkey cannon. And if you don't know what a turkey cannon is, if you're a new listener, you've got to go to the Camp Chef website, campchef.com, and you can learn all about it. And we have one to give away this week.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay.
And our engineer, Tony Skirbeck, picked the name out of the many listeners who sent us an email last week. And this week's winner is Denise Dexter of Fond du Lac. So Denise will be sending you a cannon just in time for Christmas.
And they work very well. I like them. I've tried mine.
They do. They absolutely do. Now, you mentioned you didn't get out in your tree stand.
No.
I did for a couple of brief outings on both Saturday and Sunday last week, cold as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, well, we'll save the details for when we talk to Rob Dreeslein in a few minutes. But I think I might have had an opportunity at deer had I got out there earlier.
Okay. Now, this is the muzzle loader?
Yeah. So, well, I was using my muzzle loader.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's right. It was muzzleloader season. You know, it's hard to keep track of all these seasons, and this weekend is the antlerless only season.
Right, but that's gun.
Thursday through Sunday, it's any firearm that's legal in the area where you hunt. But I just, to keep it simple, I hunt with a muzzleloader from beginning to the end of gun season.
Now, a muzzleloader is a single-shot weapon?
It's a single shot, yeah.
And you have to stomp it down the barrel? I mean, is it like the old-fashioned movies you see, the American Revolution, and they're stomping it down?
Well, except you drop the pellets in, and then you put a bullet with a sabot, which is a plastic sleeve that holds a bullet, and you jam that down in the barrel, and then you ram it home with a, you don't stomp it, you ram it home with a ramrod, and then you you prime it one way or another. And I use a Knight disc rifle, which is an inline, a modern muzzle loader. And the primer is actually a shotgun shell primer.
Okay, so it's got powder in it somehow encased
It's a little primer, just like that little button that you see on the back of a shotgun shell.
Okay.
And you put that in a little plastic holder, put that in the breech, lock it down with a bolt, and you can put a – I don't have a scope on mine. I usually have a holosight on it, which is a no-power red dot thing, you know.
Sure.
But that's on my turkey gun this year, so I'm using open sights.
And what's the range on a muzzleloader?
Well, depending on your sight, 75 to 100 yards comfortably.
Oh, that's good.
If you've got a low-power scope, and, of course, in Wisconsin, during the muzzleloader season, a scope must be one power, that is no power, you know, no magnification. Maybe 150 yards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know that there's a big group of guys out there that just are dedicated to muzzle loading, and they just love it. And I haven't investigated it, so I was just kind of curious.
Well, it's another game to get into, another set of toys to buy. And if you can use a muzzle loader during the shotgun season with a scope that has magnification, maybe 4 power.
Okay.
And 4 or 6 power. And then if your muzzle loader will take that much powder, you can actually shoot fairly straight out to 250 yards or so. I wouldn't go much beyond that.
Would you opt a muzzle loader over a shotgun?
Absolutely.
Okay, with a single, with the slug, the slug shotgun shot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Just yeah. Even over a multi-shot, you know, a repeating shotgun, because mm-hmm. you've got one accurate shot.
One kill shot and you're done.
Should take all, you know, should be all you need.
Well, cool.
I did not get a deer, but my friend Brett Gorzalski shot a nice buck, and he sent me a photo Sunday night at about 8 o'clock. He sent a photo of a deer that he shot at about 4:15. It was a nice wide-racked 8-pointer.
Yeah, kind of at the last minute.
Yeah,
there
last minute
twilight.
Thing there. So. But speaking of twilight, how about those Packers?
Oh, do we have to go there?
Well,
oh, man. Yeah, it's sad to watch. You know, I've been a Packer fan all my life. And, I mean, we've had our rough, lean years mm-hmm. where we keep losing, you know, Lynn Dickey era.
Oh, gosh. You know, don't go back that far.
But, it's sometimes it's hard to watch. Who are they playing this week?
Well, this week it's the 49ers.
Oh, okay.
But last week for the Jets game, Jeff Kahlo, our good friend at BigGuyHats.com,
He's nuts.
Sent me a photo of him and a buddy of his, and Jeff was wearing a Lambeau Field hat with the icicles on it and icicles, fake ice, of course, dripping all over his costume and his sunglasses. And his buddy had this big round cheese head that said NFL CBS. And they have an in with the CBS camera guys.
Okay.
They were featured early and often in
game.
Yeah, they had more score in that game than the Packers did, actually.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there's a reason to watch. Look
yeah,
for the
hats. Yeah, it was fun. And they made the front page of the Journal Sentinel, or Jeff did, on Monday, too. Yeah.
That's wild.
But the good news in football is that the Bears beat up the Vikings, and anytime those two teams can tear at each other, I'm happy.
There go our Minnesota listeners.
Oh, well. You know, and our Illinois listeners. Well, you know, I can beat up on both of them if I like, right? Well, in just a minute or so, we're going to hear from Rob Dreeslein, who is the editor of Minnesota Outdoor News. We're going to talk about deer hunting in Wisconsin and mm-hmm. Minnesota. We'll also talk about ice fishing. We'll talk to George Langley.
Yeah, there's a lot of ice that's safe ice now throughout the state, so
right.
That's going to be interesting.
He's up in Eagle River.
Okay.
And then your friend Chip Lear.
Yes, Chip Lear. He's given us a seminar at Bass Pro Shops down in Gurnee this mm-hmm. weekend. They have their ice fishing festival, and he'll be telling us about some innovative new products in the ice fishing, you know, things you might not have thought of, things that are new to the marketplace.
Yep, and we'll have the Camp Chef Cooking Corner with Cindy Overton again, and our No Child Left Inside this week is McBurney from Mac Daddy Lures, right?
He's nuts. He's $1 million lure. Puts rubies on his lures.
Sure. Well, if you had them and could throw them away, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I think I'd throw them to the poor people.
All right. We'll be right back with all that after this.
Did you know that 1/3 of all hunting accidents in Wisconsin are caused by people accidentally shooting themselves? Don't be your own worst enemy. This is Conservation Warden Tim Lawhern reminding you to follow these simple safety rules. Treat every firearm as if it's loaded. Always keep your muzzle pointed in a safe direction, and certainly never at yourself. Keep your finger outside of the trigger guard and the safety on until you're ready to shoot. Remember, safe hunting is no accident.
Brought to you by the Wisconsin DNR and your local Conservation Warden.
A friend of mine by the name of Michael Hupe is an attorney with the law firm of Hupe and Abraham, with offices in Milwaukee, Madison, and Appleton, Wisconsin, and in Illinois. In over 35 years of practice, they've represented tens of thousands of clients and collected hundreds of millions of dollars for them. If you've been injured in a car, motorcycle, or other type of accident, hire a powerful law firm with a proven record of large settlements. Hire Hupe and Abraham, Hupe.com, or 800-800-5678. More news, more information, more fishing. The new LakeLink has arrived.
If you've been fishing as long as we have, you'll really appreciate all that LakeLink has to offer. Log on and get all the latest fishing reports posted by fishermen just like you. LakeLink has been providing daily reports from the lakes and rivers you want to fish for over 10 years.
If you become a member of LakeLink, you'll have access to lake maps that you can customize. You can add rock bars, weed lines, and other structure that you find that are not on printed maps. And LakeLink will put GPS coordinates right on your map to mark your spots. You'll also be able to sell your used fishing gear at the online trading post and have fishing reports sent directly to your computer.
And coming soon, look for me, Judy Nugent, in the new women's section, offering tips and advice for women who love the outdoors.
You can also catch us, Dan and Judy, on the LakeLink radio page. That's lake-link.com, keyword radio. Listen to this week's show or catch any of our past shows. Send us your ideas and enter our weekly drawings for great giveaways, all on lake-link.com, keyword radio.
Hi, I'm Ted Takasaki, and you're listening to Outdoors with Dan Small and Judy Nugent, your source for the latest hunting and fishing information.
Well, Dan, last week we had Chip Lear on. He was talking all about ice fishing, and Chip's joining us again this week. And, Chip, I wanted to ask you about some of the new innovations in ice fishing. What are some of the new things on the market?
Well, I think some of the neatest developments have, you know, besides the fact that refinements on houses, augers, you know, rods, reels, lines, lures, everything is getting better and more efficient and more species-specific, which is making us more successful. But some of the neatest advancements, I think, is like augers. Last year, StrikeMaster came out with the world's first four-stroke ice auger. It's lighter, it's less than 20 pounds, and it's better for the environment because it's producing less emissions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a win-win for the environment and for fishing. And one of the neatest things that I've seen come along in a long time is this new BSX fish activator, the Biosonics fish activator. It's a device that has a speaker that you lower down below the ice, and it emits sounds of actively feeding fish.
Wait a minute. Now, it talks to you. You're talking about a fish call now.
Well, I wouldn't say call.
Okay.
It alerts fish and helps change the mood of fish. We've been using rattles and noises inside
right.
of our baits for a long time, and you can get a fish to react to noise. That's scuba divers have been using little thumb clickers for years, getting fish to become more active while they're down scuba diving.
Mm-hmm.
We use rattle baits in the summertime.
Sure.
This is no different than that.
It
doesn't necessarily call fish, but it will alert fish in your area to where you're at, and hopefully what we can see is that it actually changes the mood of the fish and will make them in a more positive, more willing to bite type mood.
Wow, so
that's wild.
So this imitates the sound of fish feeding. So you got walleyes chomping and
yeah.
muskies burping or something like that.
Well, that means they enjoyed their meal, right?
I guess, no. Yeah.
Yeah. They're actual sounds. They don't mimic the sound. It's
okay.
Actual recordings of feeding fish. They have used in large aquariums where they'll put in minnows and they'll take the sounds of, you know, whether it's panfish,
minnows dying, huh?
chomping
yeah.
on
right.
on bait, so or just that, you know, aggressive movement of fish is a school of fish is feeding on minnows. You know, it creates noise down there, and those fish know what those noises. Just
Jeez.
Like deer hunting, bucks know
mm-hmm.
bucks know
yeah.
when two other bucks are sparring.
Sure, sure.
What will they think of next?
Absolutely, that's really
this
cool.
is, you know, this is the front end of this. We don't even know what it can do yet. So I think it's, you know, it's new, it's different. I wouldn't say it's proven, but at the other side of the coin, it's a whole avenue that's wide open, and it's been a lot of fun to play with and learn more about. We're only in the second year into this, so it's there for the taking. For anybody that wants to play with it and learn more about it, they can.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Say, Chip, talking about innovations, have you heard of the fish elevator?
The fish elevator? No, I have not.
Well, now, this is an invention by a guy who fishes Lake Winnebago all the time over here in Wisconsin through the ice. It's like a big scoop on a handle, and you slide it under the ice, and when you get a walleye, especially in thick ice, once you get him in the hole, you just slide it under the fish, and you just lift him up. It's like a landing net for ice fishing.
What a great idea.
And sometimes the fish, comes off the hook, but you got him because he's already in the hole and the elevator's underneath him.
Well, how many fish have we lost, you know, either once we get him into the hole? I mean, that's the most critical portion of getting that fish landed. You can do the best fight in the world,
yep.
but we lose a lot of fish right in the hole, and you end up diving all the way up to your shoulder trying to get them back.
That's cold when you do that.
Well, it's not actually cold when you do it, but a few minutes afterwards it can be fairly frigid.
I've actually done that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we've all done it. Yeah, I should put you in touch with this guy. It's fishelevator.com.
Okay.
So check it out. And he'll be at the the Oshkosh show, I'm sure. I don't know that he gets over to the St. Paul one. But,
I love the idea.
Yeah, we're going to have him on the radio show, and we're going to have him on Outdoor Wisconsin, our TV show, too.
Super.
Well, hey, you know, you're going to be down in Gurnee, Illinois. I think that's the 8th and 9th, is that correct, of December?
December 9th and 10th.
9th and 10th at
that's
Bass
Saturday
Pro.
Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Bass Pro Shops in Gurnee, they're having their annual ice fishing weekend, and it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of hardcore ice fishermen in that area, and it's fun to get down there and talk with everybody.
All right. Well, if you want to ask Chip about this interesting fish call, that's what we're going to call it, go ahead down to Gurney at Bass Pro and look him up and listen to some of his seminars.
Well, Judy, now that we've got ice pretty much across the north, it's time to think about hard water fishing. And we ought to check in with our good friend George Langley up in Eagle River at Eagle Sports. And I think we've got him on the line. George, how you doing?
Hi, Dan and Judy. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're great. Hey, are you doing any fishing up there?
Well, they're starting to do some ice fishing. Starting last weekend and through the early part of this week, there have been people going out. We have anywhere from 2 to 3 inches of ice.
Ooh, that's pretty touchy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dan. People will go out on an inch and a half of ice.
I know. I've done it. They wear skis or snowshoes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, you'll get more and more as the days go by here. I mean, it's going to be pretty chilly.
Yes, it has been very cold at night. And even though the long-range forecast is to get a little bit warmer, I think we're building some nice ice at this point. All of the small lakes and the mid-sized lakes are closed. A few of the largest lakes are closing and have some open water yet. But a lot of the bays and the smaller lakes are fishable at this point.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what are they catching?
They're catching some walleye,
okay,
catching some northerns, and a few panfish.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing up here, I think, in the early season is the guys just are wild to go out and get some walleye.
Yeah. Well, everybody talks about first ice walleyes, and so much so that sometimes you think it's a myth, but in my experience, it's been true that the walleyes, as soon as the ice comes, seem to be where they were last when you were fishing in the fall before deer season. Is that true up there?
Yeah. They're on areas like some of our lakes on the Eagle River chain, they will hang in slightly deeper water during the daytime, but come up in just a real predictable fashion in the evening and at night. So what the guys do is they try to get their tip-ups out on the edges of these bays that the fish come up into,
mm-hmm,
and intercept them on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what are they using?
They're using golden shiners,
mm-hmm,
which work real well on our dark tannic water up here, medium shiners. And the guys will go out, I'd say 4 o'clock or thereabouts, and usually stay out till somewhere between 8 and 10 at night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not too bad. So they're not out at midnight freezing or anything.
No.
But they have those tip-ups that light up so you can see them when they trigger? Or?
Yeah, a lot of the guys will use lighted tip-ups. At this time of the year, the guys don't take shacks or anything out. So they'll just a lot of times just shine flashlights on the tip-ups and watch them pretty closely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And do you set them at different depths going up the contour?
Generally, the rule here, Dan, is that the guys want to keep those tip-ups for our walleye within 18 inches of the bottom.
Okay.
Okay, and they kind of set them along the weed edges then?
Yeah, they'll set them in a way that they pretty much know where the fish are coming out of deep water,
mm-hmm,
and they just try to intercept them. And a lot of times, 4:30, 5 o'clock, they'll get a nice run of action.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll go and they'll get the tip-ups and they'll set them further in,
uh-huh,
shallower.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
To catch the walleyes while they're on the feeding areas. Huh?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
How about the panfish?
Panfish pretty much weeds, even though they're dead. A lot of dead weeds and stuff, they still provide cover.
Mm-hmm.
And these panfish are mostly perch at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's found... It's so early. Nobody's found any crappies yet.
Yeah.
But the perch are in the weeds, and one of the nice things about panfish fishing is you can set a couple of tip-ups for northerns while you're doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's we've done that. We've done a couple TV shows doing that, in fact. How are the northerns biting?
Just started, Dan. This last weekend was the first time out,
mm-hmm,
and Saturday was pretty iffy.
Oh, yeah.
I happened to check one of the local lakes, Muskellunge Lake, and there it looked like about 15 or 20 cars had driven to the boat landing.
Yeah.
And the guys had all walked down, and they'd walked 10 to 15 feet out on the ice.
Uh-huh. Nobody wanted to be...
Came back. But then Sunday they went out.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to be first. Huh?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Nobody wanted to be wet.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Well, but I know those northerns turn on. They love that colder water, and boy, whew, they'll be in that shallow water eating those perch as fast as they can.
Yeah, and to my mind, these you get a 22 to 26, 28 inch northern. If you know how to fillet the Y bones,
yep.
which is
oh, yeah.
pretty easy to do,
yep.
I think they're as good as walleye.
I do too.
I think they're better. I actually prefer them, especially a little bigger northern because they got bigger flakes.
Yep.
Well, I take the little pieces and I make a pickled northern.
Sure.
Which is very good.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
wow.
Just in time for Christmas.
We'll have
I'm
to
lucky.
Go up there and catch some of those fish.
Oh, twist my arm.
Well, George, our show airs there in Eagle River on WERL at 12:30 on Wednesday afternoon, and that's the same station you have a daily show on, isn't it?
Yes. I have a daily show called Let's Talk Fishing, and we just talk basically local fishing conditions and happenings.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, before I forget, you have heard about the 51-inch muskie caught up here.
Yes.
The 51-pound muskie.
51-pound? No, I've heard of 50-inchers.
One of the real well-known local fishermen, a gentleman from Milwaukee named, originally from Milwaukee, named Tom Gilb.
Okay.
Tom is a row troller. And the last day of the season, on the 30th, he caught, it was 8 degrees in the morning, by the way.
Wow.
He caught a 53-inch, 51-pound, 2-ounce muskie.
My goodness.
Wow, what did he do with it?
He kept it, and
okay.
I don't blame him at
yeah.
all
yeah.
for that. I certainly would have. It was just massive.
Wow.
He's going to have it mounted?
Yes.
Ha ha.
And because it's the end of the season, he can tell us which lake, can't he?
he'd tell us all, but then he'd have to kill all
yeah, that would be a pile of dead bodies.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we'll look forward to getting up there. It's nice to know that the Eagle River area has 50-pound fish.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
phenomenal.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, George, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's nice talking to you, too.
And we'll be checking in with you from time to time to get a report from the Eagle River area.
Okay.
That was George Langley of Eagle Sports in Eagle River and also of WERL Radio in Eagle River. This next segment is brought to you by Hupe and Abraham, a powerful law firm with a proven record of large settlements. Well, Judy, last week on Saturday morning when most folks in Wisconsin were listening to our show,
mm-hmm.
I was on another show in the Twin Cities.
All right. Well, you're getting famous there, Dan.
Well, my good friend Rob Drieslein, who is the managing editor of all the outdoor news publications, including Wisconsin Outdoor News,
okay.
and he edits the weekly Minnesota version called Outdoor News over there, has a show on KFAN.
Oh, cool.
And we talked for a few minutes about Lake of the Woods, and I thought it'd be only fair to return the favor, and so we've got him on the line. Rob, how you doing?
Great. I appreciate you folks having me on, and I appreciated you joining me on the fan.
Well, it was fun. I don't know if you got any calls after that, but we don't do call-ins. We, you know, we pre-record. So, but on that day, what I didn't tell you was when I talked to you from about 6:30 to 6:45, I kept looking out my window because my tree stand is in sight of my office window there. And when I got down to the tree stand later, there were tracks. Within shooting distance of my stand.
What a trooper, man. You took one for the team.
Well, you know, and unfortunately, they were just out of range of my trail camera, and so I can't really prove that they walked through at 6:40, but I'm going to say that they did. Anyway,
for good radio. Yeah.
yeah. So, speaking of deer, your deer season is a little different structure, has a little different structure than ours. But ours is pretty well winding down. We've still got this weekend the antlerless season, but our 9-day season is over, and we killed about 330,000 deer in those 9 days. How did you folks do in Minnesota?
Well, you know, first let me say when I came here to Minnesota, I went to college in Wisconsin, became a deer hunter in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
grew up watching you on TV, Dan, wanted to be Dan Small, when
uh-huh.
I grew up that
and now you are.
Yeah, well, I'm coming close. It was a bit of a shock when I came to Minnesota because the season structure is a lot different here.
Mm-hmm.
It's spread out longer. It's divided into different zones around the state. You know, there can be a deer season going on in a portion of the state, and it's closed in another portion. And we're just talking firearms. That's, you know, excluding the fact that, of course, muzzleloader goes late, and you've got, you know, the real long archery season.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a real different structure. That said, I believe going into this past weekend, we were at about 238,000 deer killed by all methods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's still the muzzleloader season, which is growing in popularity here, just like it is across the Mississippi River over there in Wisconsin.
Yep.
And, of course, the firearms archery goes till the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our grand total ever all seasons was almost 300,000. It was about 295.
Okay.
And that was in 2003. And I think the DNR here is pretty sure we're not going to hit that number. But it's still going to be a top 3, 4, or 5 season. So it's we're going to kill a lot of deer here in Minnesota this year.
Mm-hmm. And our top year, I think, not bragging, but just to compare numbers, was around 600,000.
That's incredible.
And we do between 400,000 and 500,000 typically. We're at 336 with gun. We'll probably kill another 100,000 with the bow.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith Warnke, the DNR deer specialist, is hoping that this weekend the antlerless season will tally another 60,000-70,000 antlerless deer. And our deer herds are relatively similar in size. I wonder why our harvest is so much bigger than yours.
Well, I did take a course at UW-Madison called the Vegetation of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I took an ecology class there also, and I know Wisconsin is that whole transition zone, from the prairie to the north woods, and I remember from those wildlife biology courses that deer are a species. They're a transition species. They love the edge.
Yep.
And I've talked to biologists here too that combination of the right kind of habitat plus climate means you folks you kick out a lot of deer, and it's a great deer hunting state for that reason. Here in Minnesota, a lot of western Minnesota is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a bunch of hunters that know what they're doing, they can clean out the deer pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
When the DNR decides they want to drop the deer population in western Minnesota, a deer does not have a lot of places to hide, and we can manage that population pretty actively. Now, you get down into southeast Minnesota where I hunt now, which looks a lot like western Wisconsin, and that's a part of the state where we are starting to see our deer densities get a little steep,
uh-huh.
starting to resemble a little bit like Wisconsin.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, up in the north woods, you've got so many trees for the deer to hide behind or between that you don't have the opportunity to thin them out.
Well, it's a tougher hunt up there, that's for sure. That north woods situation, though, is much more susceptible to winter kill,
mm-hmm.
Which is a concept we never hear in southeast Minnesota. I don't think you hear a lot about it in Wisconsin. Maybe northern Wisconsin you hear a little bit. But, when I first started here at Outdoor News in the 96, 97, we had a couple tough winters. And there was even deer feeding, there were people demanding that we feed the deer up there to save the deer because there was serious, serious winter kill. And that has not been an issue the past few years to the point where I think the DNR is starting to get a little uneasy about the deer densities even in northeast Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Well, it sounds to me that maybe you don't have 600,000-plus deer in Minnesota. You might have a lower number to begin with.
Well, you're talking total population?
Yes.
I think our total population is in the neighborhood of 1 million to 1.1 million probably.
Okay.
Now, Wisconsin, it's well over a million, right?
Oh, yeah, 1.17 is what they're saying.
Yeah.
But if you're only taking 200 and some thousand, then the population's going to explode over time.
As it has in Wisconsin, is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Well, I mean, and that's the concern, as
okay.
we've seen in some of the eastern states, Pennsylvania, and to a lesser extent, or maybe a greater extent, in Wisconsin. And we are getting a lot more aggressive with our management structure here, I can tell you folks that. I mean, concepts like earn a buck, we might start seeing that in Minnesota. We've seen that on a limited basis in some of our state park hunts. Like I said, places like northeastern Minnesota where, literally 10 years ago people were demanding that they close the deer season. Now it's pretty much any deer with your basic license, and that's revolutionary by Minnesota terms.
Mm-hmm. No CWD yet?
Not in our wild herd. We have, I think we're up to 3 farms. I think we've had 1 elk, maybe it's 2 elk and 1 whitetail on domestic herds, but
mm-hmm.
not in our wild herd. And in the areas where we have had these domestic farms with the outbreaks, we've done extensive testing and have not found it in any of our wild deer. Now, I've done a fair number of presentations to hunting groups on CWD. I've reported on a lot.
Right.
And I mean, you folks have got, I forget, your farthest western, northwest outbreak is what, Richland Center?
It's in that area, yeah. It's all concentrated west of Madison.
And as the crow flies, that's not far from where I hunt in southeast Minnesota. That's probably 80, 90 miles. It's amazing how close that is. And the biologists here will tell you that Mississippi River is not a barrier as far as they're concerned when it comes to deer. So I hope it's not a matter of time, but reality suggests it might be.
Are there any controls on baiting?
We do not have baiting here for hunting purposes. That's not allowed. Recreational deer feeding is a real big, I won't call it a problem. It is allowed here. We have seen a big increase in the past 2-3 years of people illegally baiting. And this has been a front page story on Minnesota Outdoor News the past couple years. I've written a number of columns about it. Sean Parrish, our Northeast columnist, has written about it. We're seeing it more in that part of the state, that forested part of the state where it is hard to, as you referred to, Dan, it's kind of hard to bottleneck those deer and find out where they are. And so that's where there's more interest in baiting. But it is highly illegal here, and Rob Treeslein wants to keep it that way.
Well, there are a lot of folks here, and we are among them, who would be very happy to see baiting end in Wisconsin. It's been a controversial practice, and it has gotten out of hand now that folks have ATVs and pickup trucks, and they can take in not the 2 gallons that's allowed, but how many 100 pounds can you carry, basically?
There does seem to be a link with the whole ATV equation. That in areas where folks are taking ATVs, like you say, it's a lot easier to haul in sugar beets, whatever it may be. And I think it's a shame, folks. I'm from Wisconsin. I grew up hunting there, old school, and I'm disappointed that I read Wisconsin Outdoor News very closely. I'm disappointed by the level of baiting that I see in the letters to the editor, that whole debate going on.
Well, I think you also have to address the CRP. I mean, if somebody can put in crop and corn and call it CRP and then go in and selectively knock that corn down within 20 yards of their stand, what's the difference between that and baiting? And I don't know that that's been addressed.
Yeah, the whole food plot thing is what you're getting at.
Yes, exactly.
No, I've debated that quite a bit with some folks here, and you're right. I don't think we can have it both ways.
All right, folks. Well, you heard from Rob Treeslein, former Wisconsinite who now sees things from the other side of the river, his take on baiting and an interesting comparison of deer in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Thanks a lot, Rob.
Oh, my pleasure.
That segment was brought to you by Huppie and Abraham, a powerful law firm with a proven record of large settlements.
This is Chief Warden Randy Stark. Wisconsin's hunting tradition is about family, friends, stories, and memories. And landowners play a crucial role in keeping that tradition alive. Access to a place to hunt is critical to the future of hunting. So it's important hunters develop relationships with landowners and ask permission before they hunt. Remember, landowners will decide when and if they grant access to their property. This fall, we need everyone to work together to keep the tradition alive and the woods safe.
Brought to you by the Wisconsin DNR and your local conservation warden.
A friend of mine by the name of Michael Huppie is an attorney with the law firm of Huppie and Abraham, with offices in Milwaukee, Madison, and Appleton, Wisconsin, and in Illinois. In over 35 years of practice, they've represented tens of thousands of clients and collected hundreds of millions of dollars for them. If you've been injured in a car, motorcycle, or other type of accident, hire a powerful law firm with a proven record of large settlements. Hire Huppie and Abraham, huppie.com, or 800-800-5678.
And we're back. And it's time once again for our Camp Chef Cooking Corner, brought to us by Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors, on the web at campchef.com. And joining us again is Cindy Overton of Black Pot Demos. And Cindy, I understand you had a big cooking frenzy there at the end of deer camp. Tell us about it.
Well, we did. What we do, our last day at deer camp for us is a little hunting in the morning, but mostly it's a lot of eating.
Okay.
And, a lot of us have spouses that don't hunt, so we invite them out to the hunting cabin, too. And every year, for as long as I can think of, we've been doing that, trying to cook for 20 or 30 people around this little three-burner stove inside the hunting cabin.
Mm. Does it work?
Not well.
Well, Judy and I got your invitation to come out, but we were both, she was busy and I was still deer hunting, and I might as well have come because I didn't do any good on that last day of the season.
Well, see, we didn't get any the last day either, but we had a lot of fun. Charlie and I decided that, heck with this little bitty indoor stove, we're going to take out all of our Camp Chef equipment.
Uh-huh.
and set it up and do it right.
Sure.
And it was a perfect day for it. You know, a little warm for hunting, but perfect for standing outside and cooking.
So what all did you have going on there?
Well, we cooked some venison, of course. We did it about three different ways. Some of it I just fried, and some we fried with onions and mushrooms in butter, and some we just did with a little Cajun seasoning and some onions.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that in the lumberjack skillet?
I did that in the lumberjack skillet.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then we had the other lumberjack skillet we had full of fried potatoes and onions, and then we had a Dutch oven full of potatoes with onions and cheddar cheese, and a couple really nice Dutch oven desserts.
Wow.
Oh, sounds like we missed a good party, Dan.
And next year, I know where I'm going to be.
There you go. That invitation's always open.
Okay, we're going to remember that one.
I hope so.
So and now those are all products that would probably make good Christmas gifts if folks are looking for something to give the outdoor camper cooker person.
You know, they would. I got to tell you, we gave my daughter and her new husband a two-burner stove and a grill box for their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking this is great because this just took care of my Christmas shopping now for a few years, because every year I can give her another modular cooking system. Mm-hmm. I can give her a griddle to go on top of that, the lumberjack skillets, the turkey roasters. We can give her everything as time goes by.
Sure.
We gave them to her and her husband because they're college kids and they can't keep that grill out on a grill out there in the apartment, but they can grill out and then they pack it up and put it back inside. So it folds up really nice. We gave them the carry cases to go with it, and they just keep it in behind their sofa.
Okay.
Perfect.
It's perfect.
Now you don't want to forget the turkey cannon on that list of accessories.
Definitely not.
Yeah, we're giving another one away this week. It's been real popular here with us and with our listeners.
It's great, you know, and you can do more than turkeys on it.
Oh, I know.
You can do those chickens and everything else on that. I've
done a couple chickens. I can't find a pheasant big enough to fit on it, but I'm still trying. Well, listen, have you got a holiday recipe for us?
You know, I do. I have something really easy. Everyone likes pumpkin. You know, it's kind of the season for pumpkin.
Sure.
But sometimes you get tired of pumpkin pie, but we're going to do a pumpkin dump cake.
Okay.
So, easy thing to do, you take your 12-inch Dutch oven and spray a little Pam on the inside, makes cleaning up a little easier at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Dump one can of pumpkin pie filling. Not just the pumpkin, but the actual pie filling you can get.
Okay.
A large can of pumpkin pie filling, 3 eggs, and a small can of evaporated milk.
Sure.
Just dump all that into that Dutch oven, mix it up real good, and then you can pour one box, not mixed up, just one powdered box of spice cake mix.
Ooh.
Right on top of it.
Okay.
Don't mix it in. Take one stick of butter, cut it up over the top of that, put your lid on there, and you can cook it outside with about 15 coals on the top and about 8 or 9 coals on the bottom. Now, we're cooking in the winter, so I'm adding a couple coals here.
Sure, sure. So that spice cake mix is like the crumb topping, so to speak?
It makes a nice cake topping. What happens is the moisture of the pumpkin and the filling and all works up through and the butter works down, and it's like a nice cake topping.
Well, that sounds like a great plan. Well, listen, Cindy, thank you so much for sharing that recipe and those great gift ideas. And all of those gifts, I'm sure, are available on the Camp Chef website.
They are, and they're available on my Cook and Camp website
and
also.
And on cookandcamp.com, right?
Correct.
Cookandcamp.com.
That's it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cindy.
Thanks a lot.
That was Cindy Overton with the Camp Chef Cooking Corner, brought to you by Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors. On the web at campchef.com.
Well, Dan, when you were down south at the OWAA National Conference, you got the opportunity to talk to Mac Daddy and his million-dollar lure.
Yeah, I didn't talk to the lure, but we talked about the lure, Mac McBurney, and he fished in that tournament, the Bisbee tournament, at Cabo San Lucas.
That's right.
About a month ago. We need to call him and find out how he did.
Yeah, we should. But I know as part of that interview, he had a lot to say about kids and kids in the outdoors.
He did.
We would like to take a listen to that this week as part of our No Child Left Inside segment, which is brought to us by Balistrary Environmental, helping to protect their clients from environmental liability and hazards. So let's listen to that interview.
You may remember not too long ago we talked with Mac McBurney of Mac Daddy's Fishing Lures Incorporated. Mac makes some of the most amazing fishing lures you've ever seen or fished with, and I've had the pleasure and the terror of fishing with a $10,000 fishing lure. Fortunately, I didn't lose it. But there's a lot more to Mac than the bling he puts on your string. And I've got Mac here again, and I want to talk to him about some of the more important things in fishing than throwing expensive lures and catching big fish. Mac, you have some things to share on that, don't you?
Yeah, you know, Dan, I have some real solid background as a child fishing. And there's really two points that I really, when I'm talking with other gentlemen and things, you know, we're sitting, we're talking. One of the things is that we have a responsibility to our youth. Each and every one of us had a mentor. We had a grandfather. We had a father. We had an uncle. We had a really good friend that took us fishing. And we're not doing our jobs. We're not taking care of the future fishermen of the world. We're not taking care of our streams and our lakes. They're being polluted. It's very important that we preserve these things for future generations. If we do not, fishing will die. That's something that we have to really look at. I've seen some really neat things, some progress being made. There's more and more awareness. You know, myself even, I didn't realize how polluted our nations are getting, our lakes, our streams. But things are turning around, and I think we have a responsibility to our youth.
Now, you've got some strong memories of fishing, or you wouldn't be in this business, and you wouldn't be talking about fishing and saving, preserving some of the places that we fish and that we enjoy other outdoor recreation in. What are some of those memories?
Oh, Dan, some of my greatest memories as a child is fishing. I grew up in a family that hunted and fished. All the way from my grandmother, my grandfather, my uncles. My uncle was a game warden. My father and I, if we didn't fish a couple times a week, we didn't fish at all. We fished all the time. But I look back as my childhood as we fished. It wasn't about catching fish. It was about spending time together and passing on family values. Today, I see more and more our youth are slipping away. Why are they slipping away? We are not doing our jobs as passing on these family values. Family values are very important. And sitting in front of a video game, sitting in front of a television, does not mean spending time together. Going out, going fishing, what do? You spend time together. It's not about catching fish.
So how do you get adults and kids to understand this and to actually do that?
Oh, I was just sitting around with a group of men, and we were all talking about when we used to go fishing with, you know, our parents and everything, how fun it was and everything. And I looked at them all, and I said, when was the last time you took your grandkids fishing? And they went, oh, my God. I said, guys, do you know what half the problem is? Children don't want to go fishing with grumpy old men. You need to reach out, dig deep, and find that little child in each and every one of you. Do you remember when it was fun? Well, guess what? Your grandkids would have fun if you were having fun. Yeah, they're going to, oh my goodness, they're going to get the hook caught and all kinds of things. They're going to make birds nest in their line. And somebody straightened out your line, you have a responsibility. Take them fishing and get that little child in you and that little child in them together, and you'll have fun. Well, what's really neat, I'm going to tell a quick story, Dan. I love stories. That's Mac Daddy. But I took my father fishing. He's in his 70s. And I'll tell you something. When I watch him catch a fish every time, as his son, I watch a little boy catch a fish. The excitement in his eyes, I get to share.
That's a great story, Mac. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks, Dan.
No Child Left Inside is brought to you by Balistrary Environmental, working to assist their clients in reducing their exposure to environmental liability and hazards.
Nothing like the sound when the day breaks. Me and Daddy in the woods on a Saturday. You see, his granddaddy hunted these hills, and I hope someday that my kids will. He said, do me a favor before I'm gone. Love this land and pass it on. Pass it on.
And we're back. And even though we have this transition season, we're going from fall to winter, there's still a lot going on. Dan, I think there's an ice fishing show.
That's right. You know, last week we talked about the St. Paul Ice Fishing Show, and I thought the Oshkosh show was that weekend. Wrong.
Oops.
So everybody who went to Oshkosh looking for the ice fishing show last weekend, guess what? It's this weekend. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Winnebago County Fairgrounds, the Expo Center there. It's a three-day show, and it's a lot of fun. It's a small show, but there are lots of interesting things and lots of interesting people there. Filet King will be there, and I imagine the Fish Elevator will be there. And is Troy Peterson going to be there?
Yeah, Troy's going to be there, Mr. Bluegill.
Mr. Bluegill, yeah.
And he knows a lot about fish in that area, and his guide service will be there. And I'm sure, you know, if you see him, tell him we say hi.
Absolutely.
Tell him you heard about us on our show, because he's a great guy.
And coming up in January, the Wing Haven Championship Hunting Series. Now, this is Saturday, January 20th, so it's a little ways off. But we're mentioning it because it requires pre-registration. There's an entry fee. For each category, there's the Top Gun, Open, and Puppy divisions, and a variety of ways that you and a partner and a dog can compete by shooting pheasants at Wing Haven Kennels on the Horicon Marsh. If you're interested, you can go to winghavenkennels.com, or you can call Craig at 920-946-0786 for more information.
Well, and I also wanted to mention for this weekend, there is that Bass Pro event for people down in the southern half of Wisconsin and northern Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
In Gurnee, the Bass Pro outdoor store is going to have that ice fishing classic and seminars. And one of our speakers this week was Chip Lear, and he will be there giving some of his seminars.
That's right. And, of course, Monday the 11th, because the 10th is a Sunday this year, is the deadline for applying for turkey permits.
Right, yes.
So have you done that already?
I bought the little sticker thing,
yep.
But I haven't gone online to pick my zone and time. Because, as you know, we're trying to figure out when we might do a shoot for Outdoor Wisconsin.
Right.
And those turkeys are hard to get on camera. So we really want to get our best odds. So,
yep.
But I'll be doing that shortly.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to miss the deadline. Of course, if you do miss the deadline, you can always buy over-the-counter tags when they become available in March.
Yeah, for the later weeks, yeah.
Yeah. And this weekend is the four-day antlerless-only hunt statewide.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any antlerless deer tags left, or you can buy some if you don't have any, go out and shoot a doe for the cause.
Oh, yeah. I think they're looking to get 10 to 12,000 deer donated to the food pantry, the Hunt for the Hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be great if we could do that. That'd be wonderful.
It certainly would. And 10,000 donated, but maybe 60 or 70,000 killed to keep ahead of the population. Because if we don't have enough deer harvested this year, we may see a lot more zones in the Ernebuck situation.
Exactly. Yep. And what's on Outdoor Wisconsin this week?
Well, next week, that is the 14th on Outdoor Wisconsin, you and I are hunting pheasants at Bong.
Oh, that was a cold day, but fun.
It was a lot of fun. And Tom Neubauer and Dennis Radloff fish for muskies.
Cool.
And they get a nice day for their hunt, and I know they catch at least one fish. And, of course, we hope the pack does a little better this week against the 49ers.
Well, I think that's where we end today's show.
Are we done? Are they done?
So, but I hear old Anglin Wayne trolling up in the background.
Saving our bacon here. You've been listening to Outdoors with Dan Small and Judy Nugent, brought to you by LakeLink, your online fishing resource, on the web at lake-link.com. This is a production of Dan Small Outdoors, LLC. Music by Warren Nelson. Copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Thanks for listening.
On one cold leg, when the loon cries lover in the blue north wind, chilly.